All right. So who are you? You look familiar.
Oh, thank you, Charles. Nice to see you again. Yes, it's you've been coming over to Europe a lot. You're with us. I'm Don Sine from Microsoft Research in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I last had the pleasure of being interviewed by Charles in Microsoft at our lab in Microsoft Research in Cambridge. That was about a year and a half ago now.
Yes.
You came by and you saw our chess ranking. Machine learning. You interviewed our machine learning guys.
Absolutely.
Amazing work since then.
And the vision guys.
The vision, yeah. Our lab, great things happening at our lab.
And then, of course, you know, we initially were introduced to your work with generics.
That's right.
Right? Yep. You helped add that to our suite of languages, speaking of which, you're... should be a proud father of partially of F#, who's now a true sibling of the .NET family.
Well, it's not there yet. In a sense, that was, I think you're talking about Soma's sort of announcement on his blog that he that Microsoft is investing in F#, the developer division is. And this is, of course, very exciting for the project. And we talked about it last time you were in Cambridge, how we structured the project very much on an evidence basis, that we actually collected evidence that the language and the functional programming really does add value to the .NET platform, that it complements our existing language as well. It's actually, of course, in some ways intruding in the existing languages through generics and through Link and other things that have been going on in C# world. And I think this is just a sign that, that we are working out how to deliver the value of functional programming through to
the masses.
To customers. Yeah. I mean, whether masses sounds. I mean, customers who need it, whether that's the masses or whether that's key people in an enterprise or. And I think initially with F#, we're not expecting people to wholesale replace C#, of course. But we are expecting to give a tool which is particularly suited to particular kinds of work going on in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
We're interested in, for instance, bioinformatics and financial modeling and financial analysis. We certainly get people in sort of the oil and gas exploration. We had the AutoCAD guys taking a good look at it just over the last week. And so there are domains that are suited to this kind of work. And we'll be making a tool that's hopefully very high value for those domains. So.
Outstanding. Well, we have some other figures here. Who are you, sir?
Hello, I'm Robert Pickering, and I'm the author of a book on F# called Foundations of F#.
Nice.
And, I'm a software engineer for Lexify.
Excellent.
And Lexify is?
Yes.
Lexify is a company who does software for the analysis and management of derivative contracts. So that's swaps, options, and futures.
Interesting.
And that's all based on a DSL, actually implemented in OCaml, sort of cousin language of F#. And
I think all those problems exist.
Domain DSL is domain specific language.
Domain specific language, right. And it's based on a paper by my boss, John Mark Eber, and Simon Payne from Cambridge.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right. So my name is Tomáš Petříček. And I'm currently a student of Charles University in Prague. And I got involved in F# because I did an internship with Don Sine this summer in Cambridge. Yeah.
Excellent. So Don, let's we've had a lot of functional programming on Channel 9 recently, at least the concept, right? We've had Joe Armstrong, we've had Eric Meyer a lot. And so there's this problem domain concurrency. I mean, let's talk a little bit about, let's give us a little quick introduction to F# and the problems that you see it being strongest at solving and why.
So do you want that from in the concurrency kind
sure,
of domain?
Sure, concurrency.
Or you want, I mean, because in a sense I've already talked about the kind of mathematically oriented programming application areas.
Yeah.
Now, the overlap between functional programming and concurrency, this is really absolutely key topic, I think. And the way I see it developing, and you can see this in Erlang as well, is that we just use far too much imperative mutable state in our programming today. I mean, it's just a crazy amount of object mutation goes on, and people just don't have the language constructs to be able to think about where is their state and to be able to design the kind of reactive and concurrent agents that have to sort of work in a message passing kind of world. And without in to be able to design them in such a way that they're relying, they know where their mutable state is, they know where their shared state is, if they've got any shared state at all. We need to be able to lift the game up a level so that mutation becomes more the exception to the rule rather than just the norm that just kind of infects all of our programming. Mm. And so F# is definitely the kind of functional language which is aimed at making it more the exception to the rule, the kind of imperative kind of programming, or at least enabling you to know where your mutable state is through the use of particular kinds of mutable data structures, and to give you the kind of equipment you need to localize that, to minimize the use of mutable state and to localize it.
Okay.
And I think that's the primary kind of starting point.
Okay. And so some of the reasons behind that being?
It's very much in how the language is constructed. You just have to put mutable on things if you want things to be kind of mutable. And it's just you kind of, it gets in your face a little bit
okay.
when you try and do that sort of thing. The collections that you give in the language matter very much. The whole training that you give programmers as they come to the language, you know, in the expert F# book, which I've been writing, and it's coming out on the 3rd of December, the key thing is that programmers are trained right from the first chapter to think about data in a different kind of way, to think about it in a sense, the link kind of way, at a high level, transformations, queries, manipulations and on high levels of data. And if you begin to train a generation of programmers or retrain programmers in thinking at a high level about their structures, then I think we're positioning them well to work as architects in a highly concurrent kind of world.
Excellent.
Yeah. But there are more particular technical aspects I'd like to dig into. But we can kind of put those on the list to talk about. So we've got a great new feature called F# Asynchronous Workflows.
Nice.
Which are aimed at particular kinds of asynchronous and concurrent programming. In fact, that's my talk at TechEd tomorrow, is on parallel and asynchronous programming with F#.
Excellent.
And there's many parts to this kind of elephant, the concurrency elephant, if you say. And I definitely like to distinguish the kind of reactive message passing kinds of programs that, for instance, Erlang is very nicely suited to, from the kind of CPU intensive parallelism, which is also important, but often programs involve a bit of a mix of both. You're both doing database connections asynchronously and you're also processing the data in a kind of in a CPU intensive kind of way using multi cores. So what should we do? Should we dig down into asynchronous workflows? Or if you want, you've been using them a bit. We talk to Robert a bit about these kind of investigations.
Okay. So I've done a couple of blog posts recently on asynchronous workflows.
Whoa, sorry. Keep going. That was an asynchronous workflow. Nothing spilled.
That was an asynchronous exception there.
Yeah. So, continue.
And so, the main thing to get out of them is they solve quite a specific problem in F# of doing asynchronous I/O, which, interestingly, Jeff Richter has a big article in listening to MSDN about how hard asynchronous programming is in C#.
Mm-hmm.
And the really nice thing about asynchronous workflows is they make it almost exactly like doing synchronous programming, yet they just do the right thing. And they do this using a really sort of clever technique of language-oriented programming, sort of where you describe what you want to happen. Uh-huh. And there's a little process of interpretation. It just goes away and does the right thing.
Nice. Well, that's always a good thing.
Yeah. And there's also the whole kind of message passing side of it, so trying to emulate some of what Erlang does really well.
Cool.
And that's very nice. It sort of allows you to... I wrote one demo where we create a sort of counter that does word analysis on text, so breaks the text and counts the number of occurrences of each word. And the thing that was good about this counter is it could be called from mutable threads because of the message queue going into the type, and that sort of protected this collection from the rest of the world. But because we were using an F-sharp immutable map, we could also just pass a particular instance of that out to the outside world, and the outside world could use that without any danger of corrupting the states within the agent itself.
Nice.
It's kind of illustrating the importance of immutable data structures when doing multi-threading. I mean, they don't solve everything, but they do give you this nice property that you can always just take an instance and pass it to another thread without worrying about corruption.
Okay.
Can we take a slide? Can you get shots of the...
Sure.
Yeah. So I'd like to maybe just run through a couple of the slides we used to make. Yeah. And then maybe we could talk about the kind of JavaScript manifestation we've been working on.
So I'll focus in on that. It's not going to be
okay,
great.
Okay, now you're not going to be able to see the code here. And that's kind of the point for this slide. So this this code here is actually the MSDN sample, the introductory sample on asynchronous I/O, how to do use begin read and end read to schedule a read, an asynchronous read off the disk, and then to when the read comes back, because the disk can take a while to come back, comparatively speaking, with the result, it then runs the rest of the computation when the result comes back, and it's trying to process 200 images in parallel. And this little snippet down here is actually the equivalent F-sharp code for the same application. So we will take a little closer look at this and sort of how it works. So first I'm going to show you some very simple samples of asynchronous workflows.
Okay.
This is actually more, we're not doing anything really asynchronous here. We're doing two just very simple computations where we're adding up some numbers, but we're going to do them in parallel, okay? And so this is how you write it in F#. You just put async.parallel, and you put async, and then you put this little block here. And this is kind of, this async says what happens in the middle is kind of run in a slightly unorthodox way, in the sense we capture that computation, mm-hmm. and we're going to do something with it. We're going to actually run, schedule these to work in the thread pool.
Okay.
On the thread pool. Okay, so that's a very simple sort of thing. And then when they both come back, we then continue on. Now, here's a similar example where you can use exactly the same construct, the same machinery, where you actually want to get three web pages simultaneously and do this kind of fork where you go and send off all the requests, and then when all of them come back, we're going to join again.
Okay.
And if you looked at Joe Duffy's talk today, he was kind of showing how you have to do concurrency using today's technologies. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you really notice is people find it hard to capture these patterns. Okay, they find it hard to kind of capture what we think of this async parallel as a combinator, a kind of operator that captures a whole recurring pattern of control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so let's get these web pages and wait till they've all come back. And there's a parallel array map, and it's a sort of naive parallel array map. But that's sort of some of the background. Now, that was a code we were doing to go and get to process lots of images in parallel. And let's just take a quick look at this code. If we start at the bottom here, then what we're doing is actually we're going to do a whole lot of things in parallel, and for each of the images, we're going to process it, generate a job to process it asynchronously. And now what are each of those jobs doing? They're going to read the file, open the file synchronously here. We can talk about asynchronous opens later. We're going to read from the file asynchronously.
And what this means, this little bang over here, it's all in the bang. Yeah, it's like this like, little bang means the thing on the right is actually asynchronous, which means, hey, we're going to run the rest of the computation as a callback. Okay. And what that, so that means everything, so the thing on the right runs, and when it's kind of, it's an asynchronous read, which means the whole operation goes to sleep. We're not blocking any threads, we're waiting for an event to happen, the end event to happen from the disk. And then the rest of the computation gets run when the callback comes back. And so the rest of the, that means the bang means asynchronous, and then we do transform the image, and we open it for writing, and then we write it out. And then we're done. And then we queue the tasks and we do them in parallel.
Nice.
And this little object on the outside, this object, actually, it's funny, it plays the same role as... We're getting used to these link queries and the role of functional programming in link queries. And you can look at link as being sort of configurable data queries, okay? Because you can configure it to different domains. You can do link to objects, you can do link to... link to SQL, link to entities, link to XML, and so on. And but what we're doing is talking about configurable control here. Okay, we talk about configurable data, and of course we've always got this sort of dual nature between data and control. And when we get configurable control constructs, then this is what monadic control constructs, in the same way that a lot of people...
The monad.
The great monad, yeah, yes. that solves a lot of problems.
Yes,
that does. Can be, that's been a, link is about applying that to data, mm-hmm. and this is also about applying it to control. And once we have configurable control, we open up the possibility to do declarative, close to declarative kind of... general purpose asynchronous programming in a very nice style, and we can also do all sorts of other things like web services we can do using this kind of technique, and even you can do some JavaScript stuff, which maybe we could tell
interesting.
So I how about I get the demo ready to run here,
okay,
and for doing this asynchronous image processing, and maybe Thomas and Robert can tell you about those topics.
Cool.
So the project that Don mentioned when he said JavaScript, that's the project I was working on during my internship.
Hey, so let's do an ad for internships while we say that. Internships. Yeah. Apply for internships. Yes, we need... I think Thomas will say they're great. If you're watching this, you want to do an internship, come and do amazingly fun, exciting, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. UK Cambridge.
UK Cambridge, Microsoft Research and Redmond as well. We just love the interns. And
for an internship to Microsoft Research is really fantastic.
So. You will not be abused at all.
So I have a hard 8:30 stop. We got 5 minutes. We could probably continue this maybe tomorrow, but my point is if we can't, that's okay. So continue with...
So this JavaScript thing, so... The project is actually on the CodePlex. It's called F-Sharp Web Tools. So if you want to play with it, you can look at it. And so it's using F-Sharp to write web applications. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that you can write the whole website in F-Sharp. And you can mark a method using like similar blocks as we did in async samples.
Uh-huh.
So you can mark it as client side or server side.
Nice.
And it uses some other F-sharp language features, which we don't have to talk about that. But it's like extensions to what you get with C-sharp expression trees.
Okay.
So in C-sharp expression trees, you can get some data that represent the code that you wrote, and in F-sharp you can do basically the same thing, but it captures the whole method. What my sample does is that it takes all these client-side methods and translates them to JavaScript. So
outstanding.
It's nice in web browser.
So, I mean, is that... So, basically, are you taking IL and converting it to JavaScript?
No. That's another project I think you had already.
Yeah, that's Volta. Well, yeah, I was going to say.
So I took for me easier approach, which is just translating these F-sharp quotations,
mm-hmm.
which are like C-sharp expression trees.
Okay.
So it's much easier to take these and translate them to JavaScript. And I think that another interesting thing about this is that you can do some like more high level things. Mm-hmm. So I actually have the same thing as Don showed for asynchronous programming in JavaScript and these client side blocks. When you're doing call to the server side, you don't want this call to block the code execution.
Okay.
So it just uses the same technique, which is like the asynchronous workflows, but it runs on in browser in JavaScript.
Very, very interesting.
Hey, so let's do the timing here. So we've got our process images async here. So we'll whack that across to F# Interactive, and we'll there we go. That's the and then we'll put the process image synchronously, which sort of looks pretty similar, except it hasn't got the parallel construct on the for here. It's just a normal old for loop. And we've got timing on. I've already put that on. And we'll make up some fake image files, and we'll do the processing synchronously, and we'll see. And there we go. So what do we get? We got 3.816 of real time and 5.28 of CPU time. It's a dual core, so the CPU time's a bit higher. It was using some of the dual core there. Mm-hmm. And now let's do that asynchronously, and we've gone down from 3 point something seconds, down to 1.8.
Nice.
There we go. So we've got the 2x speed up. Now that speed up, that's not just because of the CPU. I mean, getting CPU speed up is of course great, but we had to do the disk. We had to get the parallelism talking to the I/O device as well. As we needed both of these things simultaneously. We couldn't just do CPU intensive parallelism.
Okay.
So it's a bad So I should say how this relates to futures and how this relates to the which is now called the Task Parallel Library.
Yep.
Which you would have heard about from Joe Duffy. And also how it relates to P-Link. So futures are about scheduling lots and lots of synchronous work items. Okay, so it's an incredibly efficient way of just generating zillions of these totally synchronous work items. So those work items aren't really allowed to do things like, as I understand it, aren't allowed to do things like asynchronous I/O. They're not allowed to do a web request or block or and so on. So so in a sense, there's often a parallel. There's lots of, just like you have a synchronous while loop, or we just saw a synchronous for loop. Then there's kind of a parallel in the asynchronous kind of world. You have an asynchronous for loop where each step along the way might go and do something asynchronous. You have an asynchronous task, which is sort of these async blocks that we've kind of been seeing. So they kind of behave a bit differently and run a bit differently to the task parallel library kind of thing. So the idea is that you would schedule all your little work items using the task parallel library, but maybe at a higher level in your architecture, that's where your asynchronous kind of work might begin to feature. So so we expect those two to work very nicely together. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the asynchronous workflow mechanism is actually really designed to be a highly interoperable mechanism. It'll sort of work with any synchronization construct where you can schedule work to happen and then schedule a callback to happen when that work completes, which happens certainly happens in all the .NET concurrency primitives, like semaphores and the like, so you can use those in conjunction with this. You should be able to use like the joins library that Claudio Russo is talking about tomorrow here at TechEd with this, and as I said, ParallelFX looks like a great mix, and yeah, so we think we're kind of providing something that really complements a certain part of the story.
Outstanding.
Yeah,
sounds good. Cool. Thanks. Well, you know, I really wish we could continue talking, and who knows, you may be able to, or I might see you again in Cambridge.
Yep, that'd be lovely. Yeah, come by again.
But it was great to meet you.
It's great to meet you.
And good job on the internship, man. So people can get your code on Codeplex. That's very cool.
Yeah.
We'll create a link to it.
Yeah, and they should really apply for an internship in Cambridge because it was a wonderful experience.
Excellent. Yeah. And people should start playing around with C#. I mean, one of the things F-sharp, forgive me.
I think people are playing around a lot with C#.
Sorry.
XNA games and everything.
But I mean, I was talking to Brian Beckman recently, and he did a talk on... no problem.
We'll edit that out.
Enjoy. You deserve that. on monads, trying to make the concept of monads simpler.
Yeah.
And one of the comments he had made is that F-sharp's provided a nice middle ground between if you want to not go to a completely foreign environment, such as, say, going from C# to Erlang or C# to Haskell, it provides a little bit more of a bridge
Yeah, to some degree.
Yeah,
I think that's true. Absolutely. I think on the Monad side, I definitely think you'd be talking mostly about Haskell. But Haskell's an amazing language, and we have very good people. It's just incredible what's going on in that community as well. Erlang, I think, is a very impressive tool. It's really sweet for doing certain kinds of asynchronous kind of programming. And I mean, one of the nice things is, I think there's a lot of learning and education that has to go on, and you can do this in lots of different ways. Maybe you like learning in the context of .NET and familiar things. Some people just like going and, you know, reading something completely different to their day job and reading a book on Haskell or playing around with Erlang or the like. And all those things are good, and I think it will really move the industry forward as people pick up these different kind of techniques.
Outstanding. Well, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And congratulations again on joining the official family.
Yeah, so we've got a lot, there are jobs going with the F-Sharp team, so please apply for those jobs. Come join us.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Thank you.